ॐ ज्ञानतमिलन्दस्य जनाजनाश्रुतय चक्षुसुमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्वपितं येन भुतले सायां रूपकदामयं ददति सापनन्तिकम् पंचकौपतुर्भ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुवैश्च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Now, Narada Muni is explaining to King Puccini Bharyasat the meaning of the allegorical story he has just told him. We've heard quite a bit of the allegory already, especially the point of how the city is the material body in the analogy, and the Paranjana is the living entity. In other words, the living entity is separate from the body, and we are souls, we are eternal. The symptom of our existence is that is consciousness, that feeling that I exist. What is that consciousness aware of? Depending upon the consciousness or the body as well, the consciousness will focus on one thing or another. Sometimes it will feel happy, sometimes it will feel sad, sometimes it will feel like grabbing a bone, sometimes it will feel like eating a worm, if we're birds, perhaps. But the consciousness itself has nothing to do with those desires and those feelings within it, because the consciousness is a symptom of the soul, and the material body focuses the consciousness, gives the consciousness a field of activities on which to focus. But in actuality, the consciousness has nothing, or the soul has nothing to do with the body at all. And when it is time for the soul to leave the body remains. It is bereft of consciousness, it is called the dead body. So, perhaps, although there are many points in the analogy, in the allegorical story, the allegorical story is basically an extended analogy, that is the main point. And how, regardless of how much the consciousness or the soul tries, makes its attempt to enjoy within the material body, it cannot be successful. Why? Because the day will come, the time will come, when the body will become old, the life air will have to leave the body along with the soul, and everything gets left behind. And then according to how we live our life, and especially yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram tam tam evati kanteya saritad bhava bharata, especially what we focus on, our consciousness on, adishtaya manastrayam vishay upasevate, what we focus our consciousness on, upon what we're attached to when we're leaving the body, when we are dying, that will dictate our very next birth. So the succession of births from the soul, of the soul, from body to body, and in each birth passing through boyhood to youth to old age in its own, according to the body it's in, but something like that, and then leaving the body again, and then a new body in boyhood and youth, and then old age, and then leaving a body, continuously changing, and the consciousness, the soul, whose symptom is consciousness, has to suffer as it tries to enjoy again and again and again. So, Narada Muni is explaining this to Pratini Bharatat. Now these verses that I don't know how many we'll be able to read tonight, because many of Prabhupada's purports are very powerful as well. We'll see how much we read. But they are very strong on these philosophical points. And, Merlina, could you open the door a little bit, or window or something? So here in text 29, first I'll read some verses, and then we'll go back and read some of the purports. They're very powerful. Covered by the mode of ignorance, in material nature, the living entity is sometimes a male, sometimes a female. A living entity means us, the soul. Sometimes a male, sometimes in a male body, sometimes a female body, sometimes a eunuch, sometimes a human being, sometimes a demigod, sometimes a bird, an animal, and so on. In this way, he is wandering within the material world. His acceptance of different types of bodies is brought about by his activities under the influence of the modes of material nature. So we'll read the verses and then go back and read some purports. What is his existence like as he transmigrates from body to body within the material world? Text 30 and 31. The living entity is exactly like a dog who, overcome with hunger, goes from door to door for some food. According to his destiny, he sometimes receives punishment and is driven out, and at other times receives a little food to eat. So this is what happens. The dogs wander, sniffing around, looking for something to eat. Sometimes the people don't like the dog being around and throw things at him or beat him with a stick, and at other times he finds some food. But he's driven by these very heavy pushings, desires, hunger. And considering that the living entity has a natural consciousness that is meant to be with Krishna, enjoying eternally in the spiritual world, then it is such a degradation to be in these bodies one after another. Similarly, the living entity being influenced by so many desires. Sometimes the desire is to eat, sometimes it's to drink, sometimes it's for peace, sometimes it's to see something, sometimes it's to hear something, sometimes it's to taste something, this, that, one after another. The senses are demanding. And the living entity is driven within a particular body and from body to body. So he wanders in different species of life according to his destiny, according influenced by so many desires. Sometimes he is high, and sometimes he is low. Sometimes he goes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to hell, sometimes to the middle planets, and so on. This is what existence is like in the material world for the eternal soul. Forgetfulness, influenced by ignorance, forced, beaten, pushed, whipped by desires, getting different results according to one's destiny. So naturally, what does one try to do? Because one naturally doesn't like the bad times, the beatings, the whippings, the punishments. Rather, one wants the pleasures. So the living entities are trying to counteract different miserable conditions pertaining to providence, our fate, other living entities, or the body and mind, the different sufferings that come our way. We try to counteract them. Still, they must remain conditioned by the laws of nature, despite all attempts to counter these laws. So everyone is trying to improve their situation. And what does improvement mean? More happiness, less work, greater pay, less work, and removal of all miseries, and all the miseries taken care of. So everyone is just efforting to do this. And what is it like? An example, text 33. A man may carry a burden on his head, and when he feels it to be too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulder. Or we sometimes will transfer the, we're carrying something that's heavy, a heavy suitcase or something, so we're holding it in one hand, and then when it gets tired, we transfer it to the other hand, and we put it on our hip, and then we carry it on our back. And but is that actually a relief from the heavy burden? No, it's just simply a transference. That's some, a relief for a short amount of time only. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another. So Prabhupada in his purport gives the example of there's a burden. It's difficult to travel from one place to another by foot. So we have very cleverly invented first the horse and buggy, and then the bicycle or whatever, and then the horseless carriage, and then the Model T Ford, and then on and on, and so many fancy cars. So that relieves one problem, the foot problem, the walking problem, but it creates simultaneously other problems, the petrol problem. Prices go up, so people have to work so hard, and then the roads get congested, and then they have to build more roads, and as soon as they build more roads, there are more cars on the roads, and they have to build more roads, and the price goes up, and then the roads fall apart, and there are holes in the roads, they have to fix the roads. So one burden after another, is that actually great, great advancement? Not actually. Changing the burden of difficulty from one place to another. It's so peculiar when you think about it that a person may have to work, it would say maybe take him, in the old days, it would take him a week to walk from one place to another to get to a place. And now he can get to that same place, what he previously it would take him a week to walk there, it would take him only an hour to drive there in his car. But he has to work for a week to get the money to pay for the car and to pay his taxes and to pay for the petrol. So it can take him an hour to get there. So it's like that, moving the burden from one place to another. So that's what it's like in material existence. So Narada continued, text 34, he's beginning to reach his conclusion. O you who are free from all sinful activity, no one can counteract the effects of fruitive activities simply by manufacturing a different activity devoid of Krishna consciousness. In other words, when we have a particular reaction to face, we may avoid facing it in one way. If we have a particular suffering, we may avoid facing it in one way, but we cannot avoid facing it at all. It will come to us in one way or another. We can shift the burden, but if we have a burden to carry, we must carry it one way or another. But there is a way to get free from that by completely dropping the burden of karma, of material life. And that, of course, is called Krishna consciousness, or love for Krishna, or going back to Godhead. All such activity, meaning the attempt to counteract the distresses of the material world due to a material attempt, is due to our ignorance, not understanding that we are souls. When we have a troublesome dream, we cannot relieve it with a troublesome hallucination. In other words, if you have a dream, and the dream, what's the typical example we use every time? Some of us use that example. Yeah, that's the answer. But what's the example we use? We're getting eaten by the proverbial tiger in the dream. And what's the answer in the dream to put yourself to put the tiger in a cage and make that the endeavor? Or to feed the tiger because he's hungry? Or to get yourself a whip so you can control the tiger all in the dream? No, obviously the answer is to wake up. And the awake state of consciousness for the soul is not identification with the body. It's to understand his relationship with Krishna. So one can counteract a dream only by awaking. Similarly, our material existence is due to our ignorance and illusion. Unless we wake to Krishna consciousness, we cannot be relieved of such dreams. For the ultimate solution of all problems, we must awaken to Krishna consciousness. We must awaken to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we suffer because we see a tiger, we could say the proverbial tiger in a dream, or a snake in a vision. But actually, there is neither a tiger nor a snake. Thus we create some situation in a subtle form and suffer the consequences. These sufferings cannot be mitigated unless we are awakened from our dreams. So in the dream, and we see this, whenever we have a dream, we're not aware of who we are, that we're lying in our bed. We become entangled in the complexities of the dream and we can't get out. And we're trying to do something, sometimes we may get lost in the dream and we're running from one place to another, and wherever we go to try to get to the safe place, we find ourselves still more lost, and one thing happens and then another thing happens. But it's only a dream. And within the dream itself, we cannot work out the actual solution, because the solution, again, is to wake up. So that is the relief. For the ultimate solution to all problems, we must awaken to Krishna consciousness. The remedy is to go back to Godhead. So we awaken. So the solution that's given is that in the dream we tolerate what's going on. In the dream of the material world we tolerate what's going on and act in Krishna consciousness. We tolerate the difficulties, the miseries that come to each and every one of us according to our karma, according to our previous reactions. We are all, just like we all have different bodies, completely different bodies, different abilities, different liabilities, debilities, different strengths, different sufferings come to one. Some people may be very handsome or beautiful, but yet they have some suffering, and in the midst of their life, of their fame, they get hit by a car or something like that, and then they get... they're maimed, or this problem, or that problem. So everyone has their own karma, their own individual karma. Strengths, weaknesses, and fate. And what one is recommended to do in text 35 is to not worry so much about what the karma is, to mitigate, not to stop the individual particular sufferings or enjoyments even, that naturally come our way according to fate, our karma, previous actions, the reactions to our previous deeds. We shouldn't get too involved in them. Rather, whatever situation we are in, we should chant Hare Krishna and try to serve Krishna with devotion, developing our devotion. And the parallel again is with the dream. When we're in the dream, the attempt should be made to wake up, not to get entangled in the complexities of the dream, because it's so complex, you can't get out except by waking up. That is the only remedy. So how to do that? Again, he's reaching the conclusion. So how to do that? He's telling this to Prachini Bharishak. How to wake up, how to get situated in our real consciousness, our natural consciousness, our Krishna consciousness. And that is to engage somehow or another in direct devotional service, or engage directly in devotional service to Krishna. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Samahita Sadrichanena Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Ganayishyati. The real interest of the living entity is to get out of the nescience, the ignorance, that causes him to endure repeated birth and death. The only remedy is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his representative. Unless one renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, one cannot possibly become completely detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. O best of kings, one who is faithful, who is always hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness, and in hearing the Lord's activities, very soon becomes eligible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. My dear King, in the place where pure devotees live, following the rules and regulations, and thus purely conscious and engaged with great eagerness in hearing and chanting of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that place, if one gets a chance to hear their constant flow of nectar, in other words, them speaking about Krishna, through great, great souls speaking about Krishna, which is exactly like the waves of a river, one will forget the necessities of life, namely hunger and thirst, and become immune to all kinds of fear, lamentation, and illusion. So here is the solution. He's explained the ludicrous, difficult position of a soul trapped within a material body, working to find his happiness and only being transferred through the cycle of birth and death from body to body to body, seeking happiness one kind after another, but actually he's identifying with the body, although he is not the body, and he has to suffer the karma that comes along with the particular body that he has deserved. So the recommendation again is to get out. How? Through devotional service, through developing deep loving attachment to Krishna. And what is the process of doing that? What is the key? To be in the association of exalted devotees who are free and who have the taste for hearing about Krishna, because hearing about Krishna is no different from Krishna. And if they are experiencing that due to their exalted consciousness, then we in their association will experience that as well. And it will appear like a constant flow of nectar that's so overwhelming, like the waves of a powerful river that will wash you away. So what does the waves of this river of nectar wash away? The consciousness that we are the body, that bodily identification, it washes that away, and therefore one even becomes free from the simplest desires, such as simplest and most basic fundamental desires, such as hunger and thirst, the necessities of life, and becomes removed from all kinds of fear, lamentation, and illusion. Because the conditioned soul is always disturbed by the bodily necessities, such as hunger and thirst, he has very little time to cultivate attachment to hearing the nectarian words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this must be very encouraging to Maharaj Prickett, who is hearing this, because he is soon to die. And he doesn't want to pay any attention to the pushings of hunger and thirst. And he is in the perfect situation to do that because he is hearing from Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So, why don't we read some of the purport? So again, this section is quite very straight. and powerful, telling what the problem is, quite simply and philosophically. What the problem actually is, the problem is that we are souls trapped within material bodies, etc. And the solution to the problem is to awaken to our real consciousness. And the process of doing that is devotional service, especially by hearing from powerful, exalted, realized devotees. So read some of Prabhupada's comments to these sections. They're also very powerful. Powerful verses, powerful comments. Sometimes he is an ordinary citizen. This is the soul inhabiting a body. Sometimes he becomes a king. This is 29. Sometimes a brahmana, a sudra, workers, so on. Because what happens is when we're a worker, we look at the person who we're working for and we say, boy, he's making all the money as I'm slaving along. So an envy accompanying a desire to be like that person, to get the facilities of enjoyment that that person has, takes birth in the heart. And the result of that will be that we will have our opportunity to taste the happinesses and the miseries of being the worker, of being the owner. The anxieties, the pressures, the burdens in that way. And then the owner, when he's the owner, he thinks, only if I was a really rich man. And then when he's a really rich man, he finds someone who has something he doesn't have, or on and on, transferring from one body to the next. Sometimes he's a happy man, sometimes a prosperous man, and sometimes a small insect. Sometimes he's in heaven and sometimes in hell. Sometimes he's a demigod and sometimes a demon. Sometimes he's a servant and sometimes he's a master. In this way, the living entity wanders all over the universe. Only when he comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master can he understand his real constitutional, natural position. Just like if we, right now, if we all think, who am I? Well, just look at your consciousness. See who is thinking. Can you do that? Examine the consciousness. The one that's the consciousness that is looking out. So, is it the body? Are we the body? No. What are we? That's the real, that's when human life begins, when we ask that question, atato brahma jigyasa. What? How is I? I'm consciousness and I'm in this body. So when one comes in contact with a spiritual master, what is perceiving the what? What is it in me that's perceiving the feeling that I'm now feeling? This is the method of gyan, to examine the consciousness in this way. What is it that is feeling, experience? What is doing the experiencing? I'm feeling. What do you feel now? I feel cold. I feel tired. I feel bored. I feel hungry, I feel sleepy, this, that, I feel confused, I feel happy, I feel, can't wait till tomorrow. But what is doing the feeling? That's the process of jnana, to keep tracing back, to examine the consciousness, to find out what is doing the perceiving. And then, by doing that, one finds out that he is the consciousness, not the feeling, not the experience. And then if he comes in contact with the devotees, he finds out he's not exactly the consciousness, but the consciousness is a soul. The consciousness is the symptom of who he is. So when he understands knowledge, he understands his constitutional position as a soul, as Krishna's servant, and that he has nothing to do with all these material experiences at all, he then becomes disgusted with material existence, Prabhupada explains. At that time, in full Krishna consciousness, he regrets his past experiences in material existence, and this regret is very beneficial because it purifies the living entity of material conditional life. He then prays to the Lord to engage in his service. And at that time, Krishna grants liberation from the clutches of Maya. These purports are actually very powerful. Daivye shagunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamevate prapadyante mayam etam tvantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Only by the grace of Krishna can one get out of the clutches of Maya. It is not possible to get out by mental speculation or other activities. When the living entity understands his real position by the grace of Krishna, he keeps himself always fit in Krishna consciousness and acts accordingly. Thus he gradually becomes completely free from the clutches of Maya. When he is strong in Krishna consciousness, Maya, illusion, cannot touch him. In this way, in the association of Krishna conscious devotees, the living entity can get free from the contamination of material existence. In this connection, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Tate Krishna Bhaje Kare Guru Sevana Maya Jale Chute Paya Krishna Charan. In the Krishna conscious state, the living entity engages in devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. In this way, he gets out of the clutches of Maya and takes shelter under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Here's another purport. Tasyaiva hetu. A poor man suffers for want of money. But if he wants to become rich, he has to struggle in so many ways. Actually, that is not a valid counteracting process, but a snare, a trap of the illusory energy. We are not happy, and we think the reason why we're not happy is because we don't have money, so therefore we struggle to get the money. But it's a snare, a trap of Maya. Because that is not a proper counteracting process to removing the misery. If one does not endeavor to counteract his situation, but is satisfied with his position, knowing that he has obtained his position through past activities, he can instead engage his energy to develop Krishna consciousness. One should simply try to develop his Krishna consciousness and not waste his time trying to improve his material condition. Actually, Prabhupada explained, the material condition cannot be improved. One has a certain karma to suffer and enjoy in this life. Tolerate the sufferings and develop love, deep love for Krishna. Another purport, this is from 36-37. The only remedy is to take to Krishna consciousness and constantly engage in the devotional service of Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is trying to be happy. And the process adopted to achieve the happiness is called self-interest. Unfortunately, The conditioned soul hovering within this material world does not know that his ultimate goal of self-interest is Vasudeva, or Krishna. Samsriti, or material existence, begins with the illusion bodily conception of life. And on the basis of this conception, there ensues a series of unwanted things, anuttas. These unwanted things are actually mental desires for various types of sense gratification. All this sits in our mind, all these desires. I want, I wish, I want, only if. And we're thinking the pursuance of these things is our self-interest, but actually it's not. It just causes they're actually mental desires for various types of sense gratification. In this way, one accepts different types of bodies due to these mental desires. Force us from one body to another in the material world. So one first has to control the mind so that the desires of the mind can be purified. This process is described in the Narada Pancharatra as Savapari Vinyamuktam Tat Paratvahinam Nirmalam. Unless one purifies his mind, purifies his concept of what his self-interest is, and thereby purifying his concept of what he should be desiring. So unless one purifies his mind, there is no question of getting free from the material condition. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Anartha upasamam shakshat bhakti yogam adhokshaje lokasya janato vidvan chakre satvita samita. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, the miseries are superfluous, can be directly mitigated or stopped by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relationship to the Supreme Truth, this Bhagavatam. Here's a short purport, 38. Constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of Vasudeva, of Krishna. Vasudeva means the all-pervading Lord. Means, what does it mean to serve him? It means constantly hearing the glories of the Lord. So at this point, it's very difficult for us to do that because we have other tastes, other desires. So therefore, the heart must be purified so that desire burns very, very brightly. The principle of bhakti yoga, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. They are the only means by which perfection can be obtained. It means always attained, always serving Krishna somehow or another with the mind, the heart, the body, with great love. Simply by hearing of the glories of the Lord, one can be elevated to the transcendental position. By the process of hearing, even though we aren't that pure yet, possibly, by the process of hearing about Krishna, the desires to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, awaken within the heart. So hearing is the process and also the end, the goal. And then in text, more glorification of hearing, 39 to 40. Well, the verse that talked about hearing about Krishna from exalted devotees is like immersing oneself in a flow of nectar, and how the river washes away the bodily needs even, and that means situates ourselves in this, on the solar energy, solar platform. Here's, we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. The cultivation of Krishna consciousness is possible where great devotees live together and constantly engage in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In a holy place like Vrindavan, there are many devotees constantly engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. If one gets the chance to hear from pure devotees in such a place, allowing the constant flow of the river of nectar to come from the mouths of pure devotees, then the cultivation of Krishna consciousness becomes very easy. When one is engaged in constantly hearing the glories of the Lord, he certainly rises above the bodily conception. When one is in the bodily conception, he feels the pangs of hunger and thirst, fear, lamentation, and illusion, one after another, like waves washing over one. But when one is engaged in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, he transcends the bodily conception. And then further down, towards the end of the purport. In the association of pure devotees, one becomes attached to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. In this way, one can cultivate Krishna consciousness. And as soon as this cultivation is advanced, one can become faithful to the Lord, devoted to the Lord, and attached to the Lord. And thus one can very quickly attain full Krishna consciousness. The secret of success in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness is hearing from the right person. A Krishna conscious person is never disturbed by bodily necessities, namely eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And then in the purport to the next verse. Unless one is associated with devotees, he cannot cultivate Krishna consciousness. Nirjana bhajan, cultivating Krishna consciousness in a solitary place, is not possible for the neophyte, for he will be disturbed by the bodily necessities, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Being so disturbed, one cannot cultivate Krishna consciousness. And then in text 44. We're just up to this now. Now, are there any questions at this point? There's one overwhelmed with the barrage of philosophy and strong points of Prabhupada. Any questions or comments? Then I'll try to finish this section now, which goes up to 51. I'll do the same thing. I'll read the verses 45 to 51, and then we'll see if we can read some of the purports. All right, we'll start at 42 to 44. Now, up to this point, he's explained, as we've just heard, about the soul and transmigration and going back to Krishna by the process of ending transmigration and going back to Krishna by the process of awakening our actual pure Krishna consciousness through hearing and chanting and the association of devotees. So, Prachini Bharishad was a follower of the Vedas. And he was performing Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. Now, where do the Vedas, which are authorized, which are legitimate, which are bona fide, how do they fit in? Where do they fit into this process? Should he keep on following the Vedic sacrifices? Of course, Narada Muni is telling him not, but here are the direct instructions on this subject. He says, the most powerful Lord Brahma, the father of all progenitors, Lord Shiva, Manu, Daksha, and other rulers of humankind, the four saintly first-class brahmacharis headed by Shanak and Sanatan, the great sages Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, and Vasishta, and my humble self Narada, are all stalwart brahmanas who can speak authoritatively on Vedic literature. We are very powerful because of austerities, meditation, and education. Nonetheless, even after inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we always see, we do not know perfectly about Him. In other words, just by advancing in knowledge through austerities, etc., one cannot understand fully the Supreme Absolute Truth. Despite the cultivation of Vedic knowledge, because the Vedic ceremonies lead to knowledge, ultimately. So despite the cultivation of Vedic knowledge, which is unlimited, and despite the worship of different demigods by the symptoms of Vedic mantras, demigod worship does not help to understand the Supreme Powerful Personality of Godhead. Because the Lord can't be known by either knowledge or karma worship, karma kandic worship. He is to be known only by devotion. Continuing in 46. When a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord who bestows His causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all the material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. So he can't be known by karma, and he can't be known by jnana. One must give up those tendencies, and when Krishna is pleased through one's devotion and desire to love and serve Him purely, then one gets one's mercy, and then by Krishna's mercy, one can understand something about Krishna. In Prabhupada's purport, he explains that he explains some of the words. The significant word Atma Bhavita indicates that the Lord is awakened in one's mind if one constantly thinks of Him. A pure devotee is always thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo. A pure devotee cannot remain a moment without being absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what purity means. This is what love means. This is the natural consciousness of the soul. His mind wanders to Krishna. Now, if our mind occasionally may, mostly it's absorbed maybe in matter. But when one loves Krishna, one's mind is thinking about Krishna, and when it wanders to Krishna too. This constant thinking of the Lord is described in the Bhagavad Gita as satata yuktanam, always engaging in the Lord's service, bhajatam priti purvakam. This is devotional service in love and affection. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead dictates to the pure devotee from within, the devotee is saved from all material activity. So Krishna, when one is pure in that way, Krishna is residing practically in his heart and mind, and Krishna is instructing continuously. The word Atma Bhavita also indicates that a devotee is always engaged in preaching to deliver conditioned souls. It is said of the six Goswamis, Nana Shastrava Charanai Kinapano Sadharma Sanstapako Lokanam Hitakarano. A pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. Delivered from what? From the cycle of birth and death that was just discussed. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by His causeless mercy. Text 47. So he's telling him, stop the performance of these Vedic karmakanda rituals that you are doing to gain some material piety, and instead you should engage in pure devotion. My dear King Bhishman, you should never out of ignorance take to the Vedic rituals or to fruitive activity, which may be pleasing to hear about, or which may appear to be the goal of self-interest. You should never take these to be the ultimate goal of life. these studies, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jada Vidya Yatta Mayara Bhaibhav Tomara Bhajane Bhada. Materialistic studies, and these are materialistic, are the glare of Maya only, and they are an obstacle in spiritual life. So Narada is telling the king not to be attached to these things. Those who are less intelligent accept the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies as all in all. They do not know that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand one's own home where the Supreme Personality of Godhead lives, Golok Vrindavan. Not being interested in their real home, they are illusioned and search after other homes. So one, Prabhupada explains, one can go, this is right at the end of the purport, one can go to the supreme planet, Param Brajet, simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. This is especially meant for the people of this age, Kaler Doshnate. It is the special advantage of this age, the age of Kali, that simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can become purified of all material contamination and return home back to Godhead. There's no doubt about this. My dear king, Narada Muni tells him finally, the entire world is covered with the sharp points of kusa grass. It means that you've been performing so many sacrifices. And on the strength of this, you have become proud because you have killed various types of animals in sacrifices. And the sacrifices have entailed you engaging in killing animals. Because of your foolishness, you do not know that devotional service is the only way one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot understand this fact. Your only activities should be those that can please the Personality of Godhead. Tat karma haritoshanam yat. You should please the Lord as your only activities. Our education should be such that we can become elevated to Krishna consciousness. And here's Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. In this verse, the great sage Narada Muni directly insults the king. And that is always a dangerous thing to do, to insult a king. Why? Because he was engaged in performing sacrifices that entail the killing of a great number of animals. The king was thinking that he was great for having performed so many sacrifices. But the great king, the great sage Narada, directly chastises him, informing him that his animal killing only leads to his being puffed up with false prestige. Actually, anything that is done which does not lead to Krishna consciousness is a sinful activity. And any education that does not lead to one's understanding Krishna is false education. If Krishna consciousness is missing, one is simply engaged in false activities and false educational pursuits. And the final two verses in this part, this is the conclusion. So what is actual education, and what is Narada suggesting the king do? Sri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supersoul and the guide of all living entities who have accepted material bodies within this world. He is the supreme controller of all material activities in material nature. He is also our best friend, and everyone should take shelter of his lotus feet. In doing so, one's life will be auspicious. One who is engaged in devotional service has not the least fear in material existence. This is because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supersoul and friend of everyone. One who knows this secret is actually educated, and one thus educated can become the spiritual master of the world. One who is an actually bona fide spiritual master, representative of Krishna, is none different from Krishna. So the best part of education is to advance in Krishna consciousness. Thank you. So you have all been very patiently listening to a lot of reading. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
You mentioned the section on shifting the burden from the head to the shoulder.
Yeah.
Prabhupada begins the good book saying that actually there's two types of burden activity. Does that mean five things?
Probably. What verse is it? Fruit of activity, meaning two kinds of activities that bring results. Some 34. Could mean, no, it's hard to say exactly. I think it seems to mean an activity performed to gain something and the activity performed to counteract something. I think that's what it means. So in other words, so we want something, we act to gain that thing, and we don't want something, we act to push it away. Both the fruit of self-centered without knowledge of who the self is. Yeah, that's what it means. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
In the verses, he lists all of those different personalities who don't know perfectly about the Lord.
Yes.
44. Is he saying that they're examples of persons who are somehow they're not quite following the right process? Or in the context, it sounds like that. But
well, there's two things. Two things. One is, it is impossible to know Krishna completely. So whatever process, if one studies the Vedas, one knows something about God, but one can't know Him completely. But how does one know more about Him? There's, you could say, although we can't know Him fully because His energies are forever increasing, but yet there is more or less. We can know Him as the all-pervading one, or we can know Him as a super soul, or we can know Him as Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can know Him as the Lord of Vaikuntha. We can know Him in Vraja. So if one tries to know Him through the process of karma, one understands something about the Supreme Controller. This is described earlier. By Preetam Raj, by explaining, because there are reactions to activities, that implies that there is someone giving the reactions. So there's a Supreme Controller. If one tries to understand Him through jnana, the process of jnana, that methodology will award him the understanding that God is everywhere and everything, and nothing is separate from spirit. If one tries to understand Him through yoga, one will understand Him as the super soul. And if one tries to understand Him through bhakti, one will understand Him as Bhagavan. So what Narada Muni is trying to do is say that, first of all, what he's saying, not trying to say, that regardless of what methodology, one doesn't know Him fully. But if one wants to know him to the highest extent, which makes the Lord reveal himself to the devotee, one has to go through bhakti, the devotional service. And the process of knowledge is in itself is insufficient to know him. I think he's basically speaking from the point of view of knowledge here. Did that sort of answer what you were saying?
He's not implying that these personalities are not doing that.
Not doing what?
Not using the... not engaging in devotional service.
Well, that's the basic level that he seems to be speaking from, except because other than he himself... Yeah, right. But even the jnani will see the Lord, and because like Daksha and Vashishta and Bhrigu Kratu, they're great brahmanas, and they're trying through the process of knowing as opposed to devotion. So they may even see him, but they see him in a particular way depending upon their consciousness, and he doesn't reveal himself fully. Yeah, do you have a clue on this one? They're seeing him as the Supreme Controller. Because he's speaking from the Vedic point of view, and by performing sacrifices, and most of these people, these sages, are sages who are involved in sacrifices and brahminical activities. But the tricky one is he himself. And also Swayambhuva Manu is one of the Mahajans. But that's the basic idea. Probably not very esoteric. Unless, Prabhupada says, he's pointing out that unless one takes to pure transcendental devotional service, one can't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in truth. Otherwise, we're limited by our own consciousness. We see according to our consciousness, and Krishna doesn't reveal himself unless one's consciousness is fully devotional. Any other questions? Okay. So tomorrow we'll continue and maybe even finish the chapter. No, not yet. Maybe by the end of the week we'll finish the chapter. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Narada Muni ki jai. The purports in these